Welcome to Your Career Cure podcast, where amazing professionals and entrepreneurs share their inspirational stories so you can get a dose of a happy career, happy life. And now, your host, Gail Tolstoy Miller.
Welcome to Your Career Cure. I am so excited. I have Matt Orzel here with me. He has years and years of recruiting experience. And for the last couple of years, he has focused on resumes, and he has a career consultancy firm, which is MJW Consulting. Did I get that right?
MJW Careers.
Careers. Okay. It's all about the... See how I screwed up this introduction? Don't do that in your pitch, okay? Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
It's all good.
All right. So, Matt, thank you. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. And thank you for having me. I've actually been doing my own little side business here. Well, it's my main business now, but since 2009. But prior to that, I was recruiting since 2003. And essentially, I help folks that need marketing tools for on their job hunt. People that come to me with sloppy resumes, poor interviewing techniques, or just don't know what to do now that they have the proper, we'll say collateral in place. They might not have a LinkedIn profile to help them with that or what have you. So I just like to get people on the move, get their butts in the seats so they can go and thrive and find, their next career move. I don't like putting people in jobs. I'd rather get them in careers. That's the goal.
Right. That's great. Now, let me ask you this. What happened in 2000? Well, we kind of know what happened in 2009, but yeah. What made you do the pivot in 2009?
Yeah, I was laid off, victim of a layoff. I was working at Johns Controls, recruiting HVAC mechanic for 3 years. And they actually moved me from Cleveland to Los Angeles. So it was like a whole supposed to be long-term home. And wham, as soon as 08 happened, I was lucky to kind of screech into 09, just barely. And then once that hit in February of 09, that was it. And I kind of had a moment where I said, I was just going to start doing some side stuff of writing resumes because I've been doing it all along anyway, packaging candidates. So, and then all of a sudden, as soon as you get your first PayPal or whatever check, you go, wow, this is actually real money that I earned, I guess, on your own. So it hasn't quit. I haven't quit since.
Okay, great. So you never want to go back to recruiting?
I don't think so. I love you recruiters in the world because you do a service for people. And a lot of times you don't get the dues you should be owed by the society for finding people work. I know it's kind of have some marks on it here and there, depending on your candidate experience, but I couldn't do it anymore. Emotional roller coaster. I've had times where I was thriving in the morning, and by the end of the day, I was crying in my manager's office, literally, just from stress. And it's, you're babysitting, and God bless you, job seekers, but sometimes you are babysitting and hand-holding to the point where it affects your actual livelihood and income. And that's where it starts to really start turning me off. But I still try to attend as many recruiting trends, webinars and things and stay on the pulse of what's happening in the industry though. So, but I don't want to place people anymore. No.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. And it's changed so much too, recruiting over the years. And, it's interesting, the resume I've seen as a recruiter, so many amazing candidates go in the no pile because their resume is not written right. And I feel like there's a lot of lazy recruiters out there that can't kind of like read between the lines. Mm-hmm. Just because you're a poor resume writer doesn't mean that you're going to be a bad employee, and vice versa. Just because your resume is amazing doesn't mean that you're going to be a great employee. So, So what do you tell the audience? Like, what are some tips that you provide? Like, what do you think is a good resume and what people should do in order to create one? And do you think people have the capability of doing it on their own? Do you think they should go out and hire someone?
Great question. And I think to lead off, like you had mentioned, the recruiters that recruit the requisition and not the candidate is where you're going to start flubbing. If a good recruiter recruit the candidate, see their succession plan, not just look at titles and move on. So I agree with you to preface this conversation that, yeah, recruiters should take a minute to breathe when they're looking at resumes, but they can't because there's 500 more to get through that day. So I get it. But yeah, it's definitely a balance there with them. But in terms of the listeners that are considering it, I'll say this. I've helped resumes with journalists, content writers, all over the board, technical writers, people that write for a living come to me because it's a different form. So like, you know, if you are an English major and you can, you know, do your kind of proper grammar and that stuff, doesn't mean you can write a resume sentence that wows the reader and gets to the point of what that win is or achievement or bottom line impact. So if you are considering hiring a resume writer, just get a free review somewhere. I offer free reviews. Find out what you might be missing. And if you're not confident enough to do it yourself, know that, you know, for, you know, maybe $300-$500, you can get this marketing document that will get you your next role, that will get you secured income again that you might be losing every day. You might be losing $2,000, $4,000, $6,000 this month because you're on the bench waiting for the next opportunity. What's $500 to get you there quicker? So it's like the old mechanic adage. We always say it. If you can't fix your own car, you go to the mechanic. If you can't write your own resume, go to a professional. The things we see that I see in the industry that really make a good resume, first and foremost, is passing that 6-7 second eye test. It is a real thing. You've probably seen it as a career person, professional, hiring manager, recruiters. We all have it. We kind of, it becomes innate after looking at resumes, thousands of them. You start seeing, okay, this person's playing the resume game. Now let's see if they're actually a good candidate, right? First and foremost is going to be the visual aesthetics, not fluffy, no text boxes and borders and graphs and pictures and all that stuff. No, it might have been fine 15 years ago before ATSs were really, truly the way people hire now, maybe even 20 years ago. But like now everything's AI to get to the human eyeballs. You got to get through some computer software. So make sure visually aesthetic, make sure you have the right layout, which if we want to talk about layout, we can get into that. But there's a certain layout you should have, and you can alter it a little bit. But again, play the game. And then the meat and potatoes is the content. Your skill selection and the actual experience section content are going to be what gets you in the interview room or what keeps you waiting around. So the way I set up my sentences, quantifiable achievements. If you don't have a metric, easy for us to still work in a quantifiable metric or quantifiable statement, just using whatever task you brought to the table from your intake. So again, the biggest thing for anybody is you got to get through that 7-second eye test because it's that quick of validating your viability as a candidate.
So do you think a candidate can beat the AI system?
Absolutely. And in fact, it's not as hard as people think if you have a format that's, you know, works. And again, professionals like ourselves have the right format. It's more of, and, you know, using the right keyword selection, it's more of once it gets to the human eyeball, what's the, you know, maybe the HR sourcer then has to pass it to the recruiter, then has to pass it to the hiring manager. So you got to get through not only the AI, but these other phases. And in some circles, it might not be as that many steps, just depends on the company, but that's kind of a general idea. So if you could just kind of, you know, again, find the right keywords off the job description. This is like coming from God himself, these job descriptions. This is a hiring manager telling a recruiter, hey, marketing major recruiter that has zero idea what an IT administrator really does every day, but I, you know, you get it enough to source me good candidates. Here's what I need in this person. Jot this down. Here's 7-10 check boxes, right? Go and highlight the job description of the stuff you know and get that exact language in your resume, get that visibility boosted. Then you're starting to beat these AI, this ATS, we call it, applicant tracking system. Everyone hears about them. All it is fancy for software that houses resumes. And we got to go find this person again in 30 days. Now there's more people in there, so it's gonna be harder to find them. So I got to use these keywords. So yeah, use the job description to your advantage. And the other tip I'll give you is the endorsement section of your LinkedIn profile, the very bottom. There's a bunch of keywords on there, and they're trying to clean that up and normalize it some because it kind of had a little bit of a Wild Wild West thing at first when they weren't all populating, but now it auto populates. So click the ones that matter and make sure those top 10 to 15 skills are like what you want to be known for. And you will get some recruiters finding you just using fundamental key searches, but job description, that's gold.
Yeah. What do you think are the top three mistakes people make in their resume?
Sure. Well, you know, spelling, grammar, I mean, I hate to say it, but people want detail-oriented people, employees. So spelling, grammar, I personally, my pet peeve, I don't know how many people is bugs. Mine is capitalizing stuff for the sake of it. Like, oh, I got to capitalize this word just because it's, you know, the word project management. And it's like, no, adhere to the grammar rules. You will not shake any waters and make any movements that are odd if you just play by the game of being pragmatic, logical when you're setting up your resume. And that includes when you're writing. If the English language doesn't capitalize the word horse, why are you doing it on your resume? I don't care if you're someone who's in the equestrian world. Keep horse minimum, lowercase. And then I would say when they don't have the right layout, like I said before, the layout drives me crazy. When I have columns or I have somebody that has that fundamental resume look, we've all seen it where it's a lot of tasks and like your skills are based on like soft skills, like communicating, team player. That stuff just bores me because it's like, look, you couldn't even make a little effort to make this thing look somewhat good. Like you kind of can totally tell people that slap it together. And that's the problem. People aren't educated enough to understand how important it is to have a resume in this hiring process. And that starts with us trying to educate the community of being like, I'm a job seeker to say, this thing dictates thousands of dollars of your livelihood. It's not going anywhere. People who hire are busy too. They have other things to do. And it's 4 o'clock on a Friday when they got to sit and sift through 20 resumes. They don't want to do that. And when they do that, you don't annoy them. Right. And for you to even get to that part of being read by hiring manager means that people below him or her vetted that hard to say, this person should be okay as a fit. So what the heck's an hour of your time to dictate the rest of your livelihood and your career trajectory? So it's so important with the layout too.
Exactly. I also come from the school of, I would rather a candidate submit to less jobs per day. So I call it like the airball resume, like a one size fits all. Like, let's just shoot off 100. Let me shoot off my resume to 100 different jobs, right? And that's impossible. There's no way that your resume is going to be perfect for those 100 jobs. I would rather someone actually maybe submit to one or two per day. And as you said before, really customize it to that particular job, because that's the person that's looking at your resume. And I also think that helps you build a perfect resume, especially if you're very focused on one thing, because I think people take it for granted that they make assumptions. Well, if I have this in there, I don't need to put that in there because I just assume that they know that. Well, you can't assume that they know that you have a particular skill that's actually very specific. You've got to put it in there. That's what I think.
Exactly. No, I completely agree. I do not like when I used to recruit getting resumes. First, the person that applies to every job at the one company, they become literally a joke of the office and it sucks. But if it's like, you know, John Smith, oh, he applied to my job, an environmental engineer. He applied to mine, an automotive quality inspector, completely different worlds. And this person is just boom, 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 boom. The spray and pray. You spray it everywhere and hope they call you back. That will actually lead me into a thought of not only don't do that, because you will get blacklisted by recruiters or the actual hiring people, because they'll see this person come through on every single job opening, but also the customized will work better because these people that are hiring will see the same words that they live in their world. They'll see the same kind of achievements of you know, was it a waste reduction, improved throughput, driving profits, whatever that this department at this company is responsible for, you're telling them, hey, I can do that stuff. And look, I've already done it. That gets people excited when they see words that they live in their world every day. That makes them want to keep reading your resume. Now, if you shoot it out and have, you know, project management keywords and sales keywords and client relationship keywords and all, it's like, whoa, whoa, Jack and Jill of all trades, 1990s wants you back there. Jack and Jill of all trades don't exist anymore.
Right.
If there's a small mom and pop shop that needs you to be a director of operations, then you got to deal with logistics over here and business development. Okay, fine. But you be mindful where you're applying and how big that company is and what they're asking for. If they want someone who can do 15 hats, they will tell you on the job description. And also use that to parlay for salary negotiation increase, because you're going to be doing a lot more work than just the one thing. But that's a great point to instead of the spraying and praying methodology, that's why I like to preach to my clients using LinkedIn, using the research that's out there to find people that you can try to cultivate genuine relationships with, offer some value, share some knowledge, and then maybe down the road, you know, you can ask them for a little one-off favor, or just try to bend their ear about what it's like to work at a certain company, or how, you know, candidates that have been getting hired recently have been successful, and what maybe you could fill in some of those gaps, whether it's, you know, a resume issue or an upskilling issue, you need a couple of skills or a technology you got to learn. But there's so much stuff you could be doing to kind of get your position and candidacy more boosted and viable than just, like you said, here's 100 applications. Oh, what a great day today. I spent 2 hours applying. I got the rest of the day off. It's like, okay. But you know, again, it'll happen for some. I mean, we can't say it doesn't, but you know, be smart, be pragmatic.
Absolutely. Now, what is your thought on the amount of pages the resume should be?
Yeah, you know, this one's always funny because it's like the old days where you walked into an office with a briefcase and like, you know, the interview, you know, it's like, I get that. But like nowadays, where everyone's scrolling, I'm fine with 2 pages. But if you're early career, within maybe a couple few years of work, if there's a second page, it better be not boring. Because if you start to become irrelevant or redundant just for the sake of having a bigger resume, it doesn't work. I mean, even like people that have 30 years at one job, I try to just do one resume and show succession and be quick about it. Cause it's like, what are you going to put on page 2? You've been in one job. There's no, like, it's not very complicated here, but I'm fine with 2. If you're, you know, someone who's mid to senior level, even executives, I don't go beyond 2. My 3 pagers are literally like, sometimes my federal folks will go a little lengthy, the USA Jobs people. My academia people sometimes will be a little lengthy because they do want to list publications and presentations and all that stuff. But if I'm doing 3 pages, I very rarely, maybe the last one I did was like a high level IT person that we just couldn't get all the technical stuff at the bottom on the second page. So we kind of went into the 3rd page and added some extra things. But again, in the age of scrolling, don't be caught up on it, but just know this. The more stuff you write that's irrelevant to the job, the more boring they get, or the more quick they're going to want to pass over, versus every line matters. It's like a screenplay. Every line matters to move your story ahead. It's just like that in a resume. Every line matters to keep them going more and more into your reading, into their reading. So then by the end, they're like, I got to bring this person in an interview. And then you're done with, that's where the resume does for you. Get you an interview room, keeps you there when you can talk about your narratives and wins specific to the resume. Now it's a little bit of a guide for you to be able to parlay that one line into more of a story when you're actually in the interview room.
Yeah, I actually agree with all of that. I think 1 page is great for someone starting out or if they've been at one job. 2 pages is acceptable if you have, you know, years of experience. And yeah, the 3 is if it's very specific, if they're IT or they have a lot, you know, as you said, academia research and they need to list everything. But your resume is such important real estate. And I think that people do use information that is just irrelevant. You know, it drives me crazy and it's so old school. I mean, everyone used to put it on the resume and I don't think it should be on there at all. Is references available upon request? I mean, who came up with that? Okay. And I've been, you know, I'm older than you. I've been doing it longer. Okay. I don't want to, like, at least 25 years. That needs to, that just needs to go. It no one needs to put that in their resume because if we need your references, we're going to ask you for it.
Yeah.
We don't need to know that. Like who, I just don't understand that. So any of you that put that on your resume, please take it off because you could put something that's more valuable. What value does it bring? Absolutely nothing.
No, and don't put the actual people on there either. If you think it's smart to like list your 3 references, not with privacy nowadays. Before the internet, you know, things were different, but now, yeah, anything with references belongs on a separate sheet, ready to roll when they ask you for it. And please have direct managers from your last jobs. Recruiters need a vet and they need to figure out if you were an a-hole, for lack of a better term, at your last job. If you got fired and there's some issues there, it's going to come out. So figure out ways to get the right managers onto your references, even if you got to dig and find some old contacts and navigate your way through to a new contact. They don't want friends and colleagues as references.
Right. The problem. Okay. So this is the problem too. And we know this happens. We've got to be real. You know, let's say you're in a specific industry and the company that you are interested in has hired people from the company that you've worked at. So what do? They go to those people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it could be someone that you didn't get along with. It could be someone that barely knows you, but, you know, I don't know. There was hearsay. So it could be really tricky. Like, you don't know what goes on behind the scenes that people are asking about you and could totally ruin your chances. I've seen it.
Exactly. And I know, you know, legality wise, you know, they can call the company and figure out dates you work there, title, and why you left. They are allowed to figure out why you left by the book standards, but you're right. Industries are small when you really start thrusting yourself into them and figuring out the SMEs and these thought leaders in them all, and the companies that are like the forefront where they all know each other's departments, executives, yeah, and all this stuff. So I had that happen when I worked at Johns Controls, because we had to recruit union members, which was even trickier because it's like, oh, you're a union member, but you're on the bench. Why aren't you working? There's so much activity right now in Los Angeles. And so almost all the times I would find someone, like, I found a union mechanic, almost all of my managers would know right away. Oh, no, we know that person. They're on a bench for a reason. So, yeah, the industries are small when you start working your way up into them and figuring out who all the players are. So try not to, you know, ruffle any feathers or burn any bridges.
That is like key. Don't burn any bridges. So many people do. They ruin their careers that way. And even when the company, you know, you work with people that are not great, bad work environment, and you just want to tell them off, and, you know, but it's just not worth it. It's not worth it sometimes because you just want to get out of there, hold your head high, and move forward and not have someone internally. Because a lot of people think that they're not getting a job because their former boss said something bad about them. But little do they know, it's actually someone who is working at a company that knows them that's saying something. So, I mean, resumes. Now, I think a lot of companies are going in a direction now of eradicating resumes, right? More of the profile. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of folks are turning to like a LinkedIn or like somewhere where they can see a quick snapshot, like a career snapshot. I've actually seen career snapshots themselves. Little one pagers are being effective as opposed to a resume. But then again, I've also heard recently from some hiring managers that they don't even look at resumes without looking at the cover letter first. So, I mean, the thing with hiring is there's so many personalities, so many lanes, that when I write mine, I use the pragmatic resume as one of my hashtags on LinkedIn. But it's like, I like to do this logical approach, because if you're playing the game right, you're not going to PO anyone, you know, and it should get to the right person. But again, as far as eliminating resumes themselves, I'm not sure how much that trend will work until we get a way to automate hiring for these people to see candidates, however technology will do that. But for right now, it's almost like, hey, if I'm a hiring manager and I'm on the go, I got to look at somebody that I'm going to find to employ them. I got to look at resumes because I don't have time to, I don't know, go on LinkedIn and just scroll or whatever. So I don't know. I guess it's interesting to see as technology keeps butting their way into the hiring game, how things will, you know, flesh out here. But I don't know. I still say have a resume to play the game right, because even if they don't want to look at them and they just want to go and see you, however else they want to approach the hiring, at least you gave them the option to look at a resume, and you still showed effort that you are, again, playing the job hunting game, and it's still part of the game.
Right. Now, you mentioned cover letters.
Mm-hmm.
That is such a sore point for many. Do a cover letter? Do I not?
Right.
I was never big on cover letters because, again, that second rule, it's like, all right, I've got all these resumes, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
You know, and I would just very slightly glance at a cover letter. And if someone didn't have it, I'd be okay with it too, depending upon, you know, the situation. So what are your tips, quick tips on cover letters?
Great question. First, like you said, I didn't read them either. I was that 50% that didn't, because like we were just want to get to the meat real quick and start start vetting. But the hiring managers that do like them prefer them and to read them. So again, have one that you can use. The more customized and tailored to the role, the better. If you take the time to do it, it will show if they do end up opening it. Some tips, though, I would say I've been a big proponent of, there's three types. I just did a show on this last week. Disruptive cover letter, the pain letter, and then the cover letter. The cover letter, the normal one, I still find it's been working for my clients. Essentially just, here's my value offerings. Here's my unique selling proposition and why I relate to your opening. Look at all these neat things that are kind of the same as your job description. It all matches up. That's the most fundamental. It works. I do like, though, taking those next steps where like a disruptive cover letter is essentially you telling them, here's your issues. Here's how I'm a big brand advocate. And I have been thinking about you so much that I understand the world you live in and I can make some real big impacts. And here's how within this type of role. Takes a lot more thinking, a lot more research, but these things will resonate with some people. And then the pain letter is essentially what it says. People have an opening for a reason, these hiring managers. If you can figure out why and how you can make that opening, you can fill the opening and make all those pains go away. That's the pain letter. And so again, those two are a little, they're kind of common, but they're a little different, but they take some research and, you know, how effective, I guess it would depend on the company probably. Their reputation, their hiring reputation of the candidate experience. If you're trying to get in at Google, you probably got to be a little more creative than if you're trying to get, Coca-Cola or somebody where it's like there's so many openings. Google's like one of these kind of like, whoa, I got, you know, it's like trying to break into the entertainment industry or something. So, you know, and some of these companies are like that. Everyone wants to work for a video game company now. Well, yeah. So they're going to have a lot more people to vet. And as many, you know, I'm still going to have the same openings. I mean, they're only so much growth expansion, you know, relates to more hiring. So if you could be creative when you're approaching those, I guess, esteemed companies versus like the ones that might not have to see as much of that. But again, I want to say, I don't want to steer anybody differently though. I mean, if you feel like no matter what company it is, you're going to put all you got into that cover letter, that's going to make you a better candidate. I mean, it's not, this isn't, you know, rocket science. It makes sense. Yeah.
I like the ones that are disruptive. I like the ones that stand out, that are not boring. Mm-hmm. And I also think from an unconscious bias perspective, because that's kind of like what I do, knowing that there's affinity bias and people like to hire people like themselves. So I think that if you start off talking about them and not yourself, like, mm-hmm. I love your company. Three weeks ago, you made this announcement and I think it's great. And I know I can grow with that. Or, you know, I heard about this bad news. I know I can help you. You know, again, this is disruptive, but it's having that commonality. It's not just the boring, hi, my name is Gail and I've got 25 years of recruiting experience and I got great communication skills and I can really grow and, you know, hire me. No, you're just... so boring. And it's like, why should they hire that? What is so engaging about that? Rather than, you know what? Well, you're not going to say, you know what? Something like, I love your brand.
Right.
I drink 2 liters of Diet Pepsi every single day. And there is nothing else that I will drink because you've got me, the taste. I love what your company stands for. You know, mm-hmm. A, B, and C, and you just release it. I understand your brand because I need to go to Diet Pepsi rehab.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. And I get your product and, you know, this, and this, and I could bring value because I've done this, and this, or, you know, you're going to obviously condense it. I'm just saying, right. But something like that, that would open up my eyes, right? Like that would be like, I would start off. I am a Diet Pepsi addict and I need to go to a Diet Pepsi rehab. And I am like, and that's the truth. Imagine sending that to Pepsi. I mean, they would like, I wish I because of your stock, like because of me, I'm increasing your stock. I mean, that's a little out
exactly.
there.
Exactly. But it's that passion will show. They'll understand it by your work.
As I'm drinking Diet Pepsi.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, can you guys sponsor me? Okay. Now I feel like, oh my gosh, Garth. No. Oh my gosh, Mike Myers. But they just did Wayne's a commercial.
World. The Wayne's World.
Wayne's World. That's it. I should know it. No, I feel like Wayne's World. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're right though.
I don't mean to digress.
No, that was a good, that's a good point though. Cause that's how it should sound in your head. But like you said, make it where it's still a professional letter, but it's like, it screams passion and people like that. I mean, you know, brand loyalty has been forever. I mean, since, you know, so, and one more over, I'll even say another type of not cover letter per se, but it's almost like a guerrilla marketing tactic. So if you're trying to think of like ways to stand out, you know, go look up guerrilla job hunting and look up all these ideas. The guy with the billboard, the guy with this resume sitting on the corner with the resume on his you know, all these the things that you've heard. I heard this one a couple of weeks ago. This person wanted to work at this New York advertising agency, and the person sent the hiring manager a Venmo request for like $45,000 because it was like a junior copywriter, so that was what they were going to pay. And he said like something like, you know, I'm your next copywriter or something. And essentially he's enticing the hire manager to pay upfront that salary through the Venmo. And the hire manager said, I just like the boldness so much that I brought him in for an interview.
Yeah.
There was
how
no,
did you not? How know, did you right? say no to that?
Like a Venmo request out of nowhere.
Yeah. Like you've got to stand out. Like you totally have to stand out. I mean, I also think that if you're really good at video, I say send a video resume on LinkedIn and do that. I think that is definitely more engaging, more interesting. Yes. If you could pull it off, right? I think exactly. If you could pull it off and you're good at it, why not? I think that's the way to go.
You know, I heard another story. It's funny you said that. I heard a story about a gal that lost the interview. She knew she lost it in her head, like at the turning point of it. And so she went home and then did a video of like, hey, how bad she felt about that moment and about how what she would have said if she didn't get so clustered or whatever. And they wanted to bring her back in because they were like, let's talk some more. So it was like little things like that where you feel like you might have lost out or if you just have so much passion for whatever role, yeah, throw it on a video. Video stands out nowadays and it's quick and has to be, like you said, done right. But getting creative, and especially in this generation, we're in a brand new, everyone's online, everyone's making, you know, this money on TikTok or this, and everyone's just in video. And it's like, there's a lot of stuff you got to cut through nowadays. And if you choose to kind of go above and beyond, even if it just gets you the interview, at least it did over the resume because you were a little more creative and who knows where it goes from there. But I agree with you completely. I love the video idea.
Yeah, totally. And I also like the audio. So like on LinkedIn, you know how you could send someone an audio message?
Yeah.
That's another great way. That could take you 60 seconds.
Yep.
And do a pitch. And this way your resume, it's just, it's not the most important thing. It's just supporting it. It's the information, right?
Exactly.
But your personality, should really, that's kind of what you want to do is kind of show your personality. And the resume is hard. Let's face it. The resume is their words. They're not who you are. It doesn't have tone. Yes, you can make it different and comfort, you know, but
I get that. Yeah.
Very yeah. But on the most part, I think if you do other things, like some of the creative things that we said, your resume won't mean as much. It's just an enhancement. It's not the thing, right?
Exactly.
So yeah, I think that's great. So let me ask you this. What was your worst career moment?
I would say, yeah, that day after I got laid off, I remember I was playing a video game and I just got hit with a wave of anxiety. Like I didn't know where I was for a second. Like I literally just didn't, you know, and I forgot my wife's name.
Ooh.
And I called my mom and I was like, I am freaking out. I don't know what this is. And I had battled a little bit of stuff in college, but not like that. So that set me off on a four-year trek of just overcoming a lot of stuff and managed to lose 100 pounds. And within that time frame and got back to church and started meditation and started my jogging and running, which I love, to kind of keep me sane. I still manage my anxiety better. I don't do any pills or anything like that, luckily, but it's like, you know, just knowing when to get out of those little trigger times and stuff. But that was the moment, man, was that day. It was my one of my best friend's birthdays too. I just remember it was February 7th of 2009. And forever that changed my life trek. So worst moment, but also my best aha moment probably.
Right. So what advice would you give to the viewer that is in that moment right now in the same situation? And we know there are people out there that, you know, lost their jobs, especially now because of COVID. And they feel really down. What's the one piece of advice that you would give them?
Get a calendar and start chunking away at little achievements. You don't need to take on big projects. And the reason when they say when you do get anxiety and stuff is because there's something going on that you got to change. It's your self telling yourself to do something. Figure out what your whether vice is or little cutting corners or something that you're doing that you know you shouldn't be doing, and try to eliminate those. If you really can't think of that stuff, you can either seek some help to kind of try to dive in or just start doing things that are going to improve your health, mind, body. Is that right? Health, mind, health? Yeah, health, mind, or whatever the
three I know what you're saying.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, like, you know, your
spirit
and your brain and your body, you know, these things that carry us because, you know, life is so in your face anymore versus even 30 years ago. So many activities and eyeballs or screens trying to get your eyeballs that, you know, yeah, it's like living in a major city, but everywhere now. So learn to shut some things off and learn to just go back to some tranquility and go get in nature and go camping and go and do some hobbies. If you're laid off, take this time to find some personal growth and get your hobbies back in. Things that tickled you when you were little or continue to tickle you or things that you care about when you're researching or doing your nightly reads of stuff that really you like. If you love Halloween, go and do something Halloween-esque or whatever. Get stuff that just makes you happy for a little while. And then try to start focusing, though, on the career stuff, but in bite-sized chunks. It doesn't have to be a one-and-done thing. Like, this Monday, I'm going to do everything I need to do and then get on my way of my job hunt. It's like, no, take, you know, maybe Monday you do a cover letter. Tuesday's a resume. Wednesday you set up your job hunting strategy and start executing and hold yourself accountable. I tell you, after I did that for years, it started just coming back, my old self. And that's what you just got to get out of the funk by controlling it, taking life by the horns and just going with it. But do a calendar. It's important to have check marks because if you don't hold yourself accountable and start letting things fall wayside, it can come back. And that's the problem. You got to do the right things.
That's great advice. And also be forgiving too of yourself.
Yeah.
It's funny because I was in the same situation 2009 as a recruiter, right? That was like the worst time for recruiters. Like it was impossible to find a job as a recruiter. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say impossible, but it was near possible, right? It was very difficult. And that's when I started my own company too. And I just, I really wasn't that depressed. It almost felt like a weight for me. You know, everybody's different. It was like a weight that was lifted. And I just started plugging away and stayed focused. I'm like, I have no idea where it's going. I had no business plan, nothing. And I'm like, I have nothing to lose. Like, what do I have to lose here? Right? Nothing. I can only go up. I can't go down. I mean, I guess you could. Everything could always get worse. But, and I just stayed focused. And I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm bragging. I guess it's going to sound like it. But within a year, I was billing like seven figures. Mm-hmm. So it's like you never know what could happen.
Exactly. It is wild. And that's the whole thing is sometimes your turning point that could be your darkest moment, though, will be that fork in the road where now it's going to lead me to that bright, the sunshine again. And so there's that famous saying where you get through the stormy waters or something to find the light on the other side or whatever. There's a famous, I wish I had these things pulled out like these academia people that just can rattle off quotes, but I'm not like that. I remember movie quotes. But you know what I mean? Like there's always that sunshine waiting. You just got to find your way through the muck to get there again. And it's possible. And talk to people. Share your story with some friends or whatever and get some lean on some people. Let them take you out. Yeah. Well, once we're done with COVID, but you know, go out and go have a meal and talk or just Zoom or chat, whatever, but like, you know, get it off your chest too. Because it helps to when you're not internalizing it at all.
Yeah. You're not alone. You're not alone.
Yeah,
and it's okay to feel bad about it. Like, I feel like people think, oh my gosh, I lost my job. I should, you know, it's like this toxic positivity, right? It's like, oh, you got to be positive. Yes, you could be positive at the same time, feel bad and feel depressed about it. But I feel like also once that depression becomes too long, right? And you allow yourself to feel, but yet when it becomes too many days where it's hindering you from figuring out or making those baby steps, maybe you haven't figured out what you want to do, but at least you're thinking about it. You're not paralyzed by your depression or your fear, and you're making those baby steps. Again, be forgiving and just keep moving ahead.
Exactly.
And keep moving forward. And I think most people have gone through this in their career. And, you know, and also let's not forget the financial piece. I mean, I think that's why a lot of people freak out is because they've got bills to pay, you know? Right. And I always say that most people are one or two or three or four paychecks away from being homeless. It's scary, you know? And when you lose your job, it's, you feel like your life has been turned upside down. It's a very scary thing. Can be, but also enlightening, and it could be the best thing that's ever happened to you. You just don't know it yet.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly put. That's exactly what I meant. It's like I wouldn't be doing my own thing now if that didn't happen back in 09.
Right. So, you wouldn't be forced to do that, and you'd be somewhere else, and you probably wouldn't be as happy as you are now. But you didn't see it at that moment, and you had to go through it in order to force you to go into that direction. So, how do you think COVID has changed the landscape?
You know, I always say that I think HR is still navigating what they're going to do. I know there's a lot of ramp up of hiring CHROs, these chief human resource officers that can deal with managing remote teams, managing managers that can manage remote teams, implementing work-life balance, which is kind of like a term that's been thrown around. But I think now they're starting to understand that mental health is here and we need to have, destigmatize it and get resources in place for workers. So you got that stuff. And then you got all the other just things that we've always been doing with the payroll and the benefits and all. So it's like HR has so much responsibility and they've more than ever now. And AI, that was the last thing, the AI stuff. So it's like they're battling all this while we're dealing with the global health crisis. So I think personally, everyone's kind of like trying to go on what they can do right now by being adaptive and starting to plan for the future post pandemic, but they're still kind of figuring out, is this the best thing we can be doing? Cause I don't think anybody's really done this. No one lived in it 1918 or 1919 to figure out what to do next. So I think everyone's just still kind of like, okay, these sound like some good guidelines. Let's go with this for a minute. And then maybe just be a flexible. So, and have backup plans in place. So if that doesn't work. So I think personally, if you're a job seeker, don't get caught up in it. Don't even worry about it. Just play the game of what you can control, which is having a nice resume, networking, building relationships, applying to some jobs, and doing your best to kind of position you into success. And let all the other people doing the hiring stuff worry about what they're going to be doing. Now, if things start to change and you aren't adapting to what those changes are, you get on board, you know, research and figure out, is there anything new? But, you know, coming from a career expert like ourselves, ATS is kind of still how it's been. It's just, you know, they're sifting more people out. So you just got to play the game, but that's nothing you can't control. I mean, just get a good resume together first and foremost, and you'll find some success and have a strategy. Have a plan of action every day so you can get better. Learn something that you didn't know the day before. Read something, research, whatever. Always improve yourself constantly, regardless of COVID or not.
Yeah, that's great advice. Absolutely. All right. Well, we've come to my favorite part, one of my favorite parts of the interview, and that is the $50 million Your Career Cure round. Are you ready?
I am.
All right, cool. First question. What would be the one cure you would give people for the biggest career mistakes or entrepreneurial mistakes a person can make?
The one cure I would give people if they have a mistake, I would say try not to take on too many projects at once. I would say finish something before you start project seven. You know, get done with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. I have found myself to be a victim of that. And I'll tell you, once I stopped, my mental health improved just there alone. So don't, the world, I know it's waiting for you and it's out there to grab, but be precise and in small doses so you can keep your sanity and still have time for you and your family.
Okay, great. Awesome. All right. Next question. What is the one cure you would give corporate America in order to improve it?
I like, you know, the idea of the diversity inclusion. I'm actually on a masterminds group where we're doing some things and, you know, I don't get into details, but it's this whole, not to get too political, but you know, everything that we're doing now, I'm so glad there's so much awareness of what's happening and we need more than ever a fair shake for everybody. We're in 2021 in America. Let's all get on board for everyone being the same and getting the fair shake. Enough of bureaucracy in the world.
So true. And we know there's a lot of bureaucracy in corporate America. That's for
sure. Everywhere. Oh my gosh.
It's craziness. Okay. Last question. What is the one cure you would give to get people that are stuck in their career or business to get unstuck?
A cure to get unstuck. Research like heck and figure out where you want to be and what you can bring value of to that place. So if you want to be doing if you want to be a musician and you're sick of corporate America, well then go make music that's cool. Don't just do it because you're pumping out a bunch of songs and none of them are good. Figure out what you can disrupt in the world itself. And don't think of it like, how am I going to do anything remotely like that? I'm just a, you know, little old me. It's like, there are people that are changing the world. And if you work hard enough and tap enough resources and smart enough, you can make your own changes. They might not be a Steve Jobs where we're all holding a phone that he invented, but there's ways you can change the world. But you got to know first what value you're going to offer. So go research, go figure out what skills you got to improve on so you could start mastering it and then reinventing it. Because you got to master it first before you can start reinventing something. And get your way onto that mastery.
Can I just add one thing? If you're that person that wants to create new music, if you create some heavy metal and bring it back, I'll be listening to it.
Yeah, Pantera.
Yeah. Come on, let's bring back rock. Actually, it is coming back. Okay.
It is. I know.
Well, it's never lost me, that's for sure.
No, that's all.
Never left me. There's nothing else. Okay. All right. Well, you were an amazing guest. Great tips. Anything you want to promote at this point that you want to tell the audience?
Just, I would say, if you guys want to find out more about me, jobstickers.com. It's like pot stickers, but job stickers. It's where my website is, as well as my blog. And I do two weekly shows. I do two shows a week, Facebook and LinkedIn. So you'll see all that on there though. So come on over to jobstickers.com and see if I can help you with anything, or just come along on my journey and we'll talk job stuff and career stuff all the time.
Sounds perfect. And I will put your links in the show notes so everyone will have it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. And folks, don't forget, happy career, happy life. Until next time.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget, happy career, happy life.